Welcome to Write Medicine, where we explore best practices in creating continuing education content for health professionals. I'm Alex Housen, and I'm on a mission to share expert insights and field perspectives on topics like adult learning, content creation techniques, effective formats, and trends in healthcare that influence the type of continuing education content that we create. Write Medicine is the premier podcast for CME CPD professionals like you, wherever you are in the content creation process. Join us.
I think you're really a product of the people that you have regular conversations with and speak to and learn from. And then you'll go away and have your own experiences, and then you'll discuss with them and share what's happened. And it's just a great place to grow together and then also offer that advice and say, look, if you start charging and undercutting me, you're undercutting a whole community.
As an aspiring medical writer, you might be wondering how to navigate the challenges of finding well-paying clients, building a supportive community, and creating accessible content. In today's episode, pharmacist turned medical writer Virginia Cecchetti offers insights and strategies to help you succeed in your medical writing journey. You'll learn how to identify and attract high-quality clients who value your skills and expertise. You'll discover the power of community in setting fair rates and supporting your professional growth. Tune in now to gain the knowledge and inspiration you need to kickstart your medical writing career and make a meaningful impact in this field. We will just jump into your journey. Just tell us a little bit about your journey into the field of medical writing and what you do and what inspired you to land in this particular spot.
Great, thank you. So I was a pharmacist in London for 7 years and then moved to Germany because my husband got a job out here, and I've been here since 2020. And I needed to find a way to work because I couldn't work in a pharmacy because I didn't know German. And there would be too much of a time gap between me learning German and getting a job. So I hopped online and I thought, okay, let's try and figure out how to make money online. What skills do I have which are valuable? How could I get into this? And so I started a blog on travel health, and my husband's friend, who was a doctor at the time, who wanted to move away from clinical work, said, oh, why don't you go on Upwork and do some writing? And I was like, okay. So I went on Upwork and I really enjoyed it because they saw my blog on travel health and they said, oh, could you review our travel section for our products online? And I said, yes. I got paid barely anything, which inspired me to create a community because I thought this is a deep injustice and I should have been paid more for the valuable work that I did. And then I set up LinkedIn, got found by a recruiter, joined my first MedComms agency, which is Medical Communications Agency, and really enjoyed it and kept going because it was good money. I could work from home and I was able to travel to the UK for work, but then also see my family at the same time as well and friends. So it worked out and I'm still going. Now I'm full-time freelancing.
It sounds as though your experience of Upwork confirms what a lot of people say about Upwork, that it's a gig economy, it's low rates, writers aren't valued. But then there are other people who swear by Upwork. They have developed a particular strategy toward making it work for them. It doesn't sound as though that was your experience, though.
So at the very beginning of my journey, jumping on Upwork wasn't great because I had no idea of rates. So they said, we'll pay you whatever you want. And I said, okay, let's do 1 penny per word, because I just Googled it like you do. And I was like desperate to build a portfolio. And I was like, oh my God, this is my first client. And, you know, it could potentially be a lot of work. So after that client and my experience, I then got further clients on Upwork where I charged the proper price of about £50 or $50 per hour. And I was very picky about the clients I would pick. So I still did get some work through Upwork, and then also got work on LinkedIn, which was much better because it's more business to business on LinkedIn and they can see your profile and how you interact on the platform. So LinkedIn is like business social media, whereas Upwork is very much a gig economy. So there's a lot more opportunity to just find someone else who does it cheaper. But Hass, who's my business partner at Right Clinic, really made Upwork work for him. And he bought Connects to bid on work. So he got better clients. And he also had a video on his profile, which introduced who he was, which is a great tactic. And I didn't have any of that. And I slowly moved away from Upwork anyway, because I made LinkedIn work for me. So my last client on Upwork paid me £1,000 for a couple of projects, which was great. And my LinkedIn clients are much more valuable than that. So I don't spend as much time on Upwork, but recommend it if you're trying to just find something and you're finding LinkedIn more challenging, because I think LinkedIn is very much based on relationship building. And so you really have to put the effort in to get to know the person and see if you are a good fit. Whereas Upwork is, I have a job, can you do it? What's your rate? Too expensive, move on. So it's a different beast, if you like.
Definitely more transactional. So I'm curious, you mentioned being picky. What do you mean by that?
So I think when you're approached by a client, they'll want you to do something, but the level of detail that they give you on the job will vary on how much they have interacted with a writer before. So if they don't have a brief or a tone of voice guide or a brand guideline, then it's going to be quite difficult to work with that client because you need to establish that foundation first. Whereas if they already have those things, then you know that they are more serious, and also it gives you more confidence that they are more likely to be a long-term client and actually pay your fees. And they can trust you and you can trust them, and they'll give you feedback, and it's likely you'll get a good testimonial because they understand what good work looks like and they value it more. So that's what I mean about being more picky with my clients. Whereas sometimes I'll have a call with a client and they'll say things like, yeah, I asked someone to do it for 3 pence per hour, so can you do it for less? And I was like, what? Not 3 pence per hour, 3 pence per word. And I'll say no. And I'll go and read some of their content as well, some of their existing content. And if it's just too much work and they're not willing to provide the time and resources to correct what they've done so that it's of a better standard, then it means that they're not really serious about the work. And it's going to be a big effort to try and help them. So yeah, that's what I mean about being picky.
So I guess there, you know, one of the things that strikes me about what you're saying is that it is often the case that clients will be, you know, they want to get the lowest price possible. Given what's been happening over the last, 4 years now, in terms of not only the pandemic, but a stronger focus on social justice issues and a broader awareness in the freelance community, not just the medical writing community, of the importance of knowing your worth. Are you seeing changes in that relationship building process and a stronger focus from writers in particular in setting out their ground rules and adopting that stance of pickiness?
Yes, I think I am seeing that more, especially for writers who have been writers for a long time. So I can definitely identify the type of client that I will work well with, especially things like how well they communicate, their responsiveness to messages. So if they're leaving me hanging for 2 weeks, it's not great. they're also their willingness to get on a phone call and actually talk together as well and meet each other face to face, if you like, even if that's just on a video call. And also a little bit about how memorable they are as well. So if they kind of seem like they're not that bothered, they're not really looking forward to the project, then it doesn't really motivate you to work with them. And I think people are being more picky and more demanding because everyone thinks that with the new technology like AI, writing is easy and you could just put a few prompts in and get amazing copywriting or medical writing that's accurate. And it's just not the case. It's as much work to review something that someone else has written to check that it's accurate, that it's in the right tone of voice. And it's also just as much work to write a proper brief. And sometimes you can't rely on AI, let alone a human, to follow a brief. And I've definitely experienced that with managing freelancers for group projects. And I often spend a lot of the first part of the project giving a lot of feedback and saying, have you read the brief? But I don't say it like that. I say, well, in the brief, the client says they want it this way and you've written it this way. Could you write it this way so that we meet the needs of the client as they've outlined in the brief? And sometimes it takes a little bit of nudging. And I think, you know, there needs to be a medical writer AI that you can prompt for every type of medical writing. That would be the solution. But AI right now is kind of trying to be a catch-all. It's trying to be everything to everyone. But as we know, that doesn't work. And you do need to tailor every piece of writing to the right audience, to the right tone of voice. And yeah, it's important to be picky, I think, because you only have so much time and so much energy that you can put towards your work. And if that work gives you so much stress that it's affecting your non-work life, then that's not a sacrifice you should be willing to make. And I definitely stick by that. And also ethically as well, I've been asked to write some things which are not evidence-based, or they are trying to market something which is not meant to be for patients and could put the patients at risk. And I don't agree with that. I'm not going to sell my skills for that or put patients' lives at risk of harm as well. So I think, you know, especially medical and health related content, we have a responsibility to do the right thing.
Absolutely. And listener, if you are a medical writer, I want you just to pause for a moment and let Virginia's recommendation about being picky resonate and sort of marinate in your body. How do you feel about that? Do you feel anxious about being picky, or are you ready to stick out your picky ground rules? You talked about community and seeing community as a way to solve the problem of Upwork. Tell us about that. What was the problem that you thought a community would solve?
So when you do anything, you always try to find someone to ask questions about that thing, whether that's buying a product, booking a holiday, and it should be the same for getting a job. So, you know, what is that job like? How much do you get paid for doing that? How long have you been doing that? Do you enjoy it? What kind of clients do you work with? Or what kind of topics do you write about? And can you work from home? Do you have kids? You know, what's your lifestyle like? And all of these questions that you just can't really Google. So when I started the community, I wanted to share my knowledge of what I found, but then also attract people who are more knowledgeable than me and ask them questions, and then build a community around everyone's knowledge so that as people build up their confidence, so people will come to the group probably not knowing anything, or they'll come to the group wanting to share their knowledge. And so everyone kind of helps each other out. And I think that has been quite successful because people who joined the group in the community on LinkedIn a couple of years ago, they are now successful writers and they're setting up their own group. They're writing their own blogs. They're helping other people out. And it just makes me so happy to see that, because that was the whole point. The point was to empower people to empower other people. And I'm getting really emotional. So I'm so happy that that has happened, because it really helped me to reach out to people like Peter Llewellyn, to Dr. Alex Evans, to Krish Kapoor. And even when Haas reached out to me, you know, we ended up creating courses and other resources for the community as well. And so I think you're really a product of the people that you have regular conversations with and speak to and learn from. And then you'll go away and have your own experiences, and then you'll discuss with them and share what's happened. And it's just a great place to grow together, and then also offer that advice and say, look, if you start charging and undercutting me, you're undercutting a whole community. And writing is hard, and medical writing is even harder. So if there was a pool of writers, we should definitely be at the top of that hierarchy in terms of skill level. And the amount of trust you need to have in a writer to deliver a good piece of medical education or a blog or social media post or information or video, it's just, it made me so angry when I experienced that myself. I didn't want anyone to feel that way, and I wanted everyone to help everyone. And I think that that is happening. And I think, yeah, we need to stand together as a community, and we're always going to be stronger together, because it's easy to pick on an individual and say, no, I'm not going to pay you that much. But if they go and ask a friend and say, am I being unreasonable? I don't think I'm overcharging here. And they say, yeah, no, you're doing all right. That's the right thing to do. That's the right amount to charge. Then it gives you confidence to go back and say, no, this is actually what I want. And then it's in the client's hands to say, okay, fine, we've had all this conversation, we've established a relationship. You either pay me this much or you don't, or we continue this relationship or we don't. And then it also gives you the opportunity and the confidence to walk away from that and get something better, because there are way more businesses than there are writers, and they need us just as much as we need them. And I think we need to establish having a fair relationship and fair value for what we bring to their business, because how do you describe your business with words? So we're putting the words on your pages to bring the customers and put the money in your pocket. And so part of that money is going to be because of us. And mm-hmm. doesn't matter how good your sales deck is, if you're not using the right words, if you don't know how to describe yourself, which is often the case, why people come to me to help develop that messaging, that key messaging, then it's not fair if you expect us to do that for little to nothing.
And do you see that emphasis on fair value reflected in the sort of formal organizations in the medical writing space? Do you hear those kinds of conversations among leadership in organizations like the American Medical Writers Association?
I have to say, I haven't heard that. And anyone that's listening, you're welcome to come and talk to me about that if you have heard it. But I strongly believe that no matter how many surveys we do, there will always be a bell curve, the amount of income that, you know, there's such a big range of how much people are willing to accept because they're desperate to get into the profession and build their portfolio, which is fine. You can do a couple of jobs to get your first testimonials at a low rate or for free for a charity, do it for a good cause. But then people at the very high upper end, they're quite exclusive and difficult to reach, and you don't know why they're able to charge that much. And then there's everyone in the middle kind of fighting over each other and not really talking to each other. And that's what I really want to break apart. I want us to start talking to each other so that we can set our own rates and set our own fair value. And I think Peter, at this time of recording, Peter Llewellyn is running a survey. He's got over 400 responses to see how much freelancers are actually getting paid. And I'm really looking forward to the results of that survey. And I filled in the survey myself as well. So yeah, I think it's not talked about enough. And people, one of the top questions people always ask is, how much do you make as a medical writer? Mm-hmm. Well, here's how much I make. Here's how much so-and-so makes. But there's no real definition. And I think it's good in a way because it means it's flexible, but we need to stay very far away from the very low end. And that's what I want us to get away from, because it doesn't make sense for someone who's got, you know, years and years of medical or scientific knowledge and experience and, you know, a Bachelor of Science, Master's or PhD to get paid little to nothing for really doing the hard work.
No, totally agree. And I do think that obviously Peter's done a lot of work over a number of decades in this area to try and kind of raise conversations around key issues in medical writing and medical communications in particular. It's the American Medical Writers Association has long published a survey. It's not annual. I think the last compensation survey was published in 2019, and they are running a survey in 2024. So hopefully we'll have additional data in 2025, which will show us what's happened over the last few years, because I think one of the things that's happened to rates is, you know, in as much information as you can get anecdotally, is that there has been a push toward the lower part of the bell curve. Mm-hmm. I hear that again and again from people who are kind of moving into medical writing as new to the field writers who have very heavy duty and solid professional backgrounds. As you mentioned, they have PhDs, they're pharmacists, they're healthcare professionals, they're vets, they're bench scientists, they're academics, and so on. And I think one of the challenges in this field has been that the professional organizations, memberships don't actually set some kind of floor on rates as a benchmark for the industry as a whole. You kind of see that in editing a little bit. The Editorial Freelancers Association in the US at least has given some thought and consideration to what rate ranges could look like. And at least that gives some kind of benchmark. I think the time is ripe for that kind of benchmarking in medical writing. What are you seeing lying ahead in the future for medical writing, and how can medical writers kind of prepare themselves for what may be around the corner?
I think there are two main things. That's a great question. The two main things are AI. We're definitely going to have to learn to work with it and not against it. So definitely learning how to become prompt engineers and essentially writing something to make the AI produce content that you want. And the second thing is more social media content for patients and the public. So I've had much more interest from clients now saying, we built our business B2B, but ultimately we're selling to health organizations who then sell on our product to a patient or a person in need of that product, as not everyone is a patient or likes to be identified as a patient. Mm-hmm. So learning how to create great social media content, if you can get into video production, that would be a massive plus. So every video starts with a script. And so writing will always be the foundation of all content, especially with metadata and SEO. So search engine optimization has been around for ages. But there is also schema, and schema is a new type of annotation for your content. So if you want to annotate certain words in your sentence to say, this is a symptom, this is the name of a condition, or this is a risk factor, you can actually annotate your health content with that, which is a very much higher level of content, which is very technical, but worth it if you have the team and resources to build that. So yeah, work with AI, get onto social media for patients and the public, and search engine optimization has always been there, so it's not really new, but schema is probably up and coming because they found the need to almost try and teach computers what our words mean. And I'm sure that's linked to AI producing what it does at the moment. So from all that tagging. And the great thing is that it's all human powered. So you're not really going anywhere as a medical writer. There's always going to be someone who's human that needs to double check something or go out and speak to other humans to do that research and then analyze it and put it together and create something that is new or engaging or simply informative and in a accessible way. And so AI, you know, is still not creative. It's only using the data that's put into it. So it's got its limitations. And then, you know, don't get me started on accuracy and referencing, because we know that needs to be tweaked. But it's great to use as a framework, but we're not depending on it. And better content always comes from a combination of humans and humans, or humans with AI. And I think it's exciting to see how health information used to be so inaccessible and only at university and then from your doctor, and now it's all over your phone everywhere. And unfortunately, along with that comes a lot of misinformation. So that's why you're needed now more than ever if you are a health content creator or a medical writer or copywriter, and to steer brands in the right direction as well if you do work in marketing, because there are a lot of rules about what you can and cannot say. And so you should always make sure that you're looking at your country's guidelines on how you advertise medicines or medical products or the claims that you make. And so there's all this knowledge that we have, which is, you know, you can't really put into an AI as an all-in-one yet. So I would say stay creative and keep doing what you're doing.
Here are my takeaways from my conversation with Virginia. Virginia echoes advice you've probably heard from other sources too, including on this podcast. Embracing artificial intelligence and learning to work with it as a prompt engineer will be crucial for future success in medical writing. Second, while AI can be a useful tool, it has limitations in creativity, accuracy, and referencing, making human input and oversight indispensable. Human expertise is going to stay essential in ensuring the accuracy, creativity, and effectiveness of medical content, even as artificial intelligence advances. And third, it's probably about time for professional organizations like the American Medical Writers Association to set benchmarks for rates to address income disparities in the medical writing field. Medical writing communities offer a space for writers to share knowledge and discuss fair compensation. It's certainly one of the things that we focus on from time to time in Write CME Pro, a specialist professional development membership for medical writers who want to specialize in continuing medical education content. We're back on Monday with Monday Mentor. And on May the 8th, Alana Brody and David Setiadi of Projects and Knowledge will be sharing their experiences in creating chatbots to support CME activities. They'll talk about the role of natural language processing in understanding user queries and AI's role in crafting personalized learning interventions for healthcare professionals. You won't want to miss this episode. In the meantime, don't miss out on other Write Medicine podcast episodes. Subscribe to the podcast on your favorite listening platform and sign up for Write Medicine Insider for CME and podcast updates. Until next time, keep listening and keep learning.